This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
If you look at any major river system in the country, take the Mississippi as an example. Up in Minnesota, Minneapolis, they drop their wastewater into the Mississippi. It flows downstream. They take it out in St. Louis and they run it through conventional drinking water treatment, and then they drink it.
What would you say to the idea of drinking a tall, cool glass of wastewater? On the face of it, it sounds, well, yucky. But it turns out you've probably been drinking it all along. There's good technology now for extracting impurities and making even the dirtiest water potable. And some water districts around the country are taking this technology to scale. This week on Sea Change Radio, we dig into the archives and hear from Mike Marcus, the general manager of the Orange County, California Water District. Orange County's practices may represent the high watermark for the reuse of H2O. Then we speak with Danelle Baird, the founder and CEO of Block Power, a startup that uses technology to retrofit buildings in financially underserved communities. Baird explains Block Power's business model, tells us what inspired him to start the company, and talks about the challenges that the current political environment brings. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by the general manager of the Orange County Water District, Mike Marcus. Mike, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Good morning, Alex. Thank you very much.
So why don't you first tell us what sets apart Orange County's water district from, I don't know, one outside of Kansas City or one in Virginia Beach?
Well, the Orange County Water District manages a very large groundwater basin in Southern California, and it serves about 2.4 million people. And that population can pump out of the ground 75% of their total water demands as groundwater. So it's very important for us to keep refilling the basin so that we can sustainably pump out of the basin. Now, the issue that we have here in Southern California is that we get a very limited amount of rainfall every year, about 18 inches of rainfall on average. So we live in a desert, and I think we need to educate our people of that fact. And so with that limited amount of rainfall, we have to find other sources of supply for our groundwater basin. And we've turned to recycling wastewater, because that is, for us, the most reliable source of water that we can then put back into the ground, recharge that water, so that it can be pumped out and consumed by our population. Now, what we do, though, is we take wastewater from the Orange County Sanitation District. So all of the wastewater in Orange County goes to the Sanitation District. They then treat that water through a secondary process, a biological process, whereby it's safe to discharge into the ocean. But instead of discharging it into the ocean, we consider that not a waste but a resource, so we capture that water before it goes to the ocean, and then we run it through an advanced purification process. And I think that's what sets us out. So we developed what we call the groundwater replenishment system. And what this treatment system does is it takes that wastewater that otherwise would be wasted to the ocean and runs it through an advanced treatment process consisting of microfiltration, reverse osmosis, and then UV light with hydrogen peroxide. By the time it goes through this advanced treatment process, it's of distilled quality water. We then take that water, put it back into the ground. It percolates into the ground, then is ultimately pumped out and consumed by the 2.4 million people in Orange County.
And one of the ways that you really stand apart is that final process. A lot of water districts create recycled water, but usually they're using it for golf courses and other industrial uses. Is that right?
That's exactly correct. That's what's called non-potable recycled water, and it's roughly the equivalent of the first step that we use, of microfiltered water. And you're right, what sets us apart is using the reverse osmosis and the UV light. What that does through the reverse osmosis process, we're removing any viruses, dissolved minerals, or pharmaceuticals that are in the water. And the UV light gets any very low weight molecular organics. So we are stripping all of that out of the water before it goes out into the basin. And what's noteworthy is the current project produces 100 million gallons of water per day and is the largest potable reuse project in the world. And we're looking at going into our final expansion, as a matter of fact, and just starting the design on that, which would expand the plant from 100 million gallons a day to 130 million gallons per day, which is our ultimate capacity.
And can you put that in perspective in terms of those 130 million gallons? What does a New York City use per day, for example?
Well, I can tell you that 130 million gallons will provide enough drinking water for a million people for 1 year.
Really? So in terms of cost, how much more does this cost than a standard treatment facility? And as you mentioned, Orange County is largely very arid. How long did it take for it to pay for itself, the project?
The cost of water out here in California is fairly high in that most of our potable water is imported. It's imported either from Northern California or from the Colorado River. So there's and we consider that imported water.
And right.
The major wholesaler of imported water is the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. And they provide that imported water. And the cost of our recycled water is about a half of what the cost of that imported water would be. What's really important about this project is it gives us water supply reliability in the area. And our costs have remained fairly constant while the cost of imported water is rising over time.
And are you aware of other similar projects that are going to be replicated around the country or more specifically in California?
There's many projects that are being considered, potable reuse projects. And in fact, the city of San Diego is developing a project right now that would be about a 20 million gallon per day project. And I think they're starting the design on that and will be completed 5 to 7 years from now. The city of LA, not quite as far as along, but are looking at a similar type project at a similar capacity. Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, I mentioned them a little earlier, being the major wholesaler of imported water, is actually looking at potentially building a potable reuse project ultimately that would be 160 million gallons per day. But that's still on the drawing board. That's well into the future. Northern California, Santa Clara Valley Water District has a 10 million gallon facility that's currently online, utilizing the same technology. If you look worldwide, the country of Singapore has actually implemented these types of projects. And they've been online for probably close to 15 years now. With our project, we came online, I think, as I mentioned, in January 2008. It's kind of as interesting aside, the Singaporeans actually came over here in the mid-90s when we were pilot testing the technology and we shared our results with them. And I think that helped lead them into implementing the projects that they've built.
So, Mike, we were talking about the cost of reusable potable technology. Can you compare it to desalination efforts around the globe? It seems like it would probably be a much more affordable solution. Is that fair to say?
It is fair to say. I think that these types of projects, certainly we had the benefit of economies of scale. We had a very large groundwater basin. We had a place to put this highly purified water. Our costs are probably half of what desalinated water would cost currently.
for you. But in like Saudi Arabia, it might make more sense to go with desalination, is what you're saying? Where they don't maybe have as much groundwater.
Correct. Or as much wastewater to recycle.
I see.
Interestingly enough, in Saudi Arabia, it's kind of a cultural thing also. They are a little bit hesitant to utilize water reuse for religious reasons. For others, statewide, just speaking in California, and this certainly would extend to other parts of the country, because we are looking at Texas as being doing recycling, Florida as doing a lot of recycling. But for us in California, a new project would probably cost a little bit more than ours, but it would still be probably about a third less than desalinating seawater.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to the general manager of the Orange County Water District, Mike Marcus. So Mike, you mentioned the hesitancy culturally in Saudi Arabia. I read an article in San Jose Mercury News that was chronicling the Santa Clara Valley Water District's recycled water project. And they said that some of the barriers has been what they quoted as what they termed the ick factor. And they mentioned, I thought it was kind of funny, they say, terms such as treated wastewater and toilet to tap don't exactly help that perception. And the headline of this article is, "Toilet to tap? Some in drought-prone California say it's time." So it's just almost too seductive for the headline writers. They want to be able to kind of get those clicks and get people reading, and it sounds kind of alarmist. But how much of a ick factor have you encountered in your county, in Orange County, with the recycled water project?
Good question. And we didn't get into the issue of public perception, but that was really one of the keys to success to our program, in that we started an outreach program very early in the process. I mean, before we even started designing the facilities. And what we did was we built up kind of coalitions. We first went to the people that were going to use the water and asked them for their support. We went to local elected officials at the local level, at the state level, at the federal level, all getting letters of support from them. The environmental community, very supportive of the project, health and medical community. So we built this coalition, and that's what helped us kind of fend off any of those perception type issues. In fact, on our project, we had no active opposition to the project whatsoever. However, as you mentioned, the press seems to love the term toilet to tap. And the way we answer that that question, Alex, or that comment or statement when it's used, is we tell them, really, that's a misnomer. I mean, what that implies is the water is going directly from the toilet into the drinking water system. And we say, it's not what actually happens. In fact, the wastewater flow out of a common household, out of the toilet, is about 10% of the flow, right? Mm-hmm. Because you have showers, you have sinks, you have washing machines, all of those flows out of a household go into the sanitary sewer. And then it travels from the sanitary sewer and it goes to the wastewater treatment plant. And they have a process. They settle the solids out, they biologically treat the water. We also tell people that they've been drinking wastewater all their life, they just haven't realized it. If you look at any major river system in the country, take the Mississippi as an example, up in Minnesota, Minneapolis, they drop their wastewater into the Mississippi, it flows downstream, they take it out in St. Louis and they run it through conventional drinking water treatment, and then they drink it. And then they put their sewage back into the Mississippi and it flows downstream and it goes through this cycle, such that by the time it reaches the Gulf of Mexico, it's been reused up to a dozen different times. So what we're doing goes far and above any type of treatment that is used anywhere in the United States. And our water is perfectly safe. We're coming up on our 10th anniversary in January, and have been extremely successful. I mean, we test for over 400 contaminants. We have to test down to the part per trillion level on many of them. And we've never had a violation in our permit or had to shut the plant down because there was something wrong with the process. So we do have the technology, and we do have the ability to remove all of the contaminants out of water. We've, I think, are an example that that the process and the system can work.
Well, it's a fascinating discussion, Mike, and I appreciate you taking the time. He's the general manager of the Orange County Water District, Mike Marcus. Mike, thank you for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure. Thank you, Alex.
Everyone is trying to get to the bar. The name of the bar called Heaven. The band in Heaven plays my favorite song. They play it once again. They play it all night long. Heaven is a place where nothing ever happened. Heaven is a place where nothing ever happened. There's a party.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Donnell Baird. He's the founder and CEO of Block Power. Donnell, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Super excited to be here. Thanks for having us.
So explain in a nutshell what Block Power's model is.
We are trying to use cutting edge technology that is disrupting and innovating industries like Uber, or Airbnb. We're trying to bring that cutting-edge software and technology to the business of greening buildings in low and moderate income American communities. And so we're using software and hardware and connected devices and smart sensors and machine learning to help us green buildings at scale.
And give us an example of Block Power in action. How has it helped some of your clients?
Absolutely. So we're working with the mayor of the city of New York to green 500 to 1,000 buildings in Brooklyn and Queens. And these buildings are in low and moderate income communities across Brooklyn and Queens. Some of these neighborhoods are experiencing rapid gentrification. And we know that when we green a building, not only are we reducing the greenhouse gas emissions, but we're also reducing the energy costs and consumption of that building. And so we actually can increase the profitability of buildings, enabling some building owners to kind of maintain a property as affordable housing or with having reasonable rent for people that have been in the neighborhood for decades so that they don't have to move. Specifically, lots of our clients come to us. They need to replace their boiler that supplies heat into their heating system of their building. And these boilers, sometimes they burn filthy, oil that has a lot of particulate matter. Sometimes they burn clean oil, for what that's worth. Sometimes they burn natural gas. In the best of situations, they are powered by solar panels, right? Solar hot water heating systems. And so we work with clients to properly size and replace their heating systems in order to ensure that they're operating at maximum energy efficiency, which generates savings to the client in terms of a reduced energy bill and reduces greenhouse gas emissions.
When you're saying clients in a boiler situation, would that be the homeowner themselves or would that be an intermediary?
Well, it depends on what kind of building. So a lot of our clients are churches or synagogues, right? Some of our clients are small businesses who own their building or lease their building. Could be nonprofits, community centers. Also, multifamily housing complexes. Those are a huge number of our clients where you have a property owner who owns a building that may have, 5 units or 10 units or 70 units. And they're trying to figure out how to manage this building to keep their tenants comfortable, to make sure that the building's profitable, to make sure that the air that's circulating throughout the building isn't causing, you know, super high rates of asthma attacks. And, you know, learning to figure out how to lower their operating costs where they can. And so any one of those building owners is a client. And so we work with them to figure out the way to make their building healthier, smarter, and greener.
And sticking to the boiler example, how would somebody have gotten this information before Block Power's technology? And maybe explain how, if you can kind of get into the weeds, how the application would actually give them the information without them being a super techie.
Absolutely, absolutely. So the problem is this industry is a mess, right? And for those of us who believe in climate change and don't think that it's a hoax invented by the Chinese, we have to solve the business problems associated with, you know, the nitty gritty of like replacing a boiler or replacing a heating system or installing a high efficiency HVAC unit. Because that is where a ton of greenhouse gas emissions come from. 68% of greenhouse gas in New York City comes from buildings, right? And so figuring out how to do the nitty-gritty of making those buildings greener and more efficient is incredibly important. So specifically with a boiler, for example, what people do now is they don't properly maintain the boiler because it's in the basement, it's gross, it's expensive, it's hard to understand. And basically when the boiler breaks or stops working, they call a local contractor, and the contractor comes over and says, it's, you know, probably going to cost me $200,000 to replace this boiler, and the law, local city building codes say that you have to provide a minimum heat to your tenants of 65 degrees. So in order to ensure that we can get your building up to 65 degree temperature, I'm going to put in a huge new boiler. Which, by the way, I'm going to charge you a ton of money for because it's bigger, and it's gonna take more work for me as a contractor to install it. So the contractor installs this huge boiler, which is going to overheat the building. He or she takes home a big fat paycheck, and the building owner is stuck with this large new boiler in the basement.
And the analysis of that can cost money as well, right? Just getting somebody to give
exactly.
you you don't get the free quote necessarily for something like this, correct?
Right. So the contractor walks in and they're going to get paid for installing a new boiler, right, to replace your old one. And a sophisticated building owner is actually going to hire an engineer to come in and analyze the building to figure out what the appropriate size of the replacement boiler should be. Or if you generally want to green your building to become more efficient, or you want solar panels, you need to have an engineer kind of visit your building and basically do a walkthrough of your building, catalog all of the equipment, and start to analyze the way that equipment is performing and how each individual piece of equipment's performance interacts with all the other equipment. And that's pretty expensive. And long and short of it, it can cost anywhere from $10,000 to $100,000 just to perform that engineering analysis. And that engineering analysis tells you what you need to do in order to make your building more efficient. And most people, you know, don't have that kind of money to spend on an engineering analysis, which they then hand to a contractor who then says, okay, well, that's great. That tells you what size boiler you need for this building to replace your broken boiler, but I'm going to add $200,000 of labor costs onto it to actually install. So now you got a $300,000 boiler project. And that's just really hard for communities, low and moderate income communities, to figure out. So in effect, we're installing this huge fossil fuel guzzling heating system in all of our buildings instead of installing like hyper efficient technologies that reduce energy costs and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. That's the current state of the industry.
And so it's a kind of a Faustian bargain for a lower income building owner who's looking at either spending way too much to quote unquote do it the right way, or they end up doing it the wrong way, which can be very inefficient and expensive for everybody involved, including the planet.
That's right.
So Block Power is essentially is kind of cutting out that initial engineering cost.
And to that point, let me add another layer of complexity, because now you got a $300,000 boiler replacement. You're a building owner in the middle of Detroit or in the middle of the Bronx. you got this $300,000 bill coming your way, and you may not have that cash on hand. If you don't turn the heat on, you're in violation of the law because you're not providing legally mandated heat to your tenants. It's actually hard to finance these boiler replacements as well, right? So if you're the building owner, you've got multiple challenges, and that the engineering is expensive, and it's hard for you to access financial services so that you can actually provide adequate heat to your building, right? If you need to replace the boiler. So you got those two problems. So what Block Power does is we think that the same way that mobile computing and big data are revolutionizing industry after industry across the American economy, that they should revolutionize the green buildings industry in low and moderate income communities. And so what we do is we show up, we install sensors, just like the sensors that sense touch and temperature inside your iPhone or Android. We buy these cheap sensors, we distribute them throughout the building, and we connect them through a local internet gateway that we install that's also pretty cheap. We put in a $50 credit card size computer into the boiler and into the basement where the boiler is located, and we start to collect data on temperature, pressure, humidity, and the way that heat is produced, transferred, and distributed throughout that building. By installing these sensors, we're able to perform the analysis using our software on the data that's being collected by the sensors. We can actually replace that engineering cost of $50,000 to $100,000, and we can do it at $3,000 to $5,000, right? Perform that analysis that tells you what kind of hyper-efficient boiler you could replace your broken boiler with that's going to save you money on your energy bill and also reduce carbon emissions. And so that is how we solve the engineering problem that causes a lot of trouble in the retrofit industry. And then because we have a ton of data on your building, and because we've lowered the cost of performing engineering analysis, for the same amount of money that you would spend on one building, we can now analyze 20 buildings. And because we're analyzing 20 buildings, now we have a portfolio of buildings that we can take to a Wall Street investment bank like Goldman Sachs or Deutsche Bank. And they have their set of internal incentives for providing capital to invest in these green building projects in low and moderate income communities at a pretty decent interest rate. I mean, they offered us capital at 5.5%, which is a pretty good rate. So now we're able to provide engineering analysis and capital at a decent interest rate to green buildings projects in low and moderate income communities. Does that make sense?
It does. The company is Block Power, and the founder is Donnell Baird. Donnell, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to SeaChange Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Horace Silver and Little Jimmy Scott. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to SeaChange Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SeaChange Radio, I'm Alex Wise.